on KDNK in Carbondale on this Monday morning, November 14th. Thank you once again for listening. Adam Fox, Director of Strategic Engagement at the Colorado Consumer Health Initiative, spoke to KGNU in Boulder about their statewide nonprofit last week. Here's a clip.
There were a lot of other organizations that were working in aspects of the healthcare system, but they might have been focused on a specific population or a specific disease condition, that kind of thing. So there wasn't necessarily a consumer voice that was focused at this systemic level like we are. So we've been very active in how Colorado decides to implement health reform. We helped support the legislation that created our state-based marketplace known as Connect for Health Colorado that is kind of a fundamental piece of the state-based implementation of the Affordable Care Act. We also advocated for the expansion of Medicaid, which is part of Obamacare as well. And we've been working diligently to make sure that Connect for Health Colorado functions the way it's supposed to for consumers and is as consumer-friendly a process as possible. The way our membership works is our members come together and help us determine our policy positions on some of these systemic issues. So as a member, we provide resources, whether that's around communications, whether that's for trainings around what is happening in the healthcare realm and how to be a better advocate, and supporting some of the work that individuals are interested or organizations are interested in and some of the issues that they're seeing. So we serve as a research arm for some of our members in that regard, but also as a way to amplify some of the things that they are seeing and are interested in and that we really need to address for Colorado consumers. The biggest issue is really affordability. We've seen an increase in the rate of underinsurance, while we've seen an increase in the number of people that have health insurance. And that's concerning because we don't want things like co-pays and co-insurance to be barriers to people accessing the healthcare that they need. One of the ways that we do try to rein in health insurance costs is we're kind of the nerds that are digging into the health insurance rate filings when they are trying to raise their rates. And if we don't feel that those are justified, we'll push back on them.
For more info, go to cohealthinitiative.org. Thanks to KGNU for sharing this audio. Carbondale's Planning Commission will meet this Thursday, November 17th, to continue hearing from the public on short-term rental regulations in town. Also on the agenda will be a discussion about a housing study, RFP, requested by the Board of Trustees. Meanwhile, planning staff are working on a zoning map to better understand planned unit developments and single-family zone districts in town. The goal is to share a finalized map with the commission in December or January for adoption. Independence Pass is scheduled to remain open this week. We'll let you know when CDOT makes an announcement. According to Carbondale Town Manager Jay Harrington's weekly email to constituents on Friday, the Parks and Recreation Commission heard from a landowner adjacent to the Nature Park at their meeting last week who asked that the town revisit a decision to remove dead trees on the north side of the park. The commission made a recommendation on a 6-1 vote that the tree should be preserved as birding habitat. A new trail alignment may need to be put in place for park safety. For now, Public Works has installed a temporary fence with signs to try to keep people out of danger. Reverend Shauna Foster, minister of Carbondale's Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation, served in the Army National Guard shortly after 9/11. She sat down with KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh to talk about her reflections on Veterans Day, her own experiences with the military, how her attitude has changed over time, and the Veterans Camp for Water Protectors in North Dakota.
I was 16 years old when September 11th happened. I was in high school and I lived in Papillion, Nebraska, a small suburb of Omaha, Nebraska. And I definitely wanted to help get the bad guys. And at the same time, they would pay for college. I didn't feel like I had any other opportunity to go to college. I'm the first in my family to do so and to get a degree. So I decided to join the Nebraska Army National Guard. And I specifically picked that military occupational specialty of being a nuclear biological chemical specialist because I really wanted to help with the global war on terror. The military had been told that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and we would definitely be needed for the upcoming invasion of Iraq.
Well, that proved false.
That's right. It was very difficult for me because my unit was never deployed. I joined in 2002 and I waited for years and years and years and we were not deployed. And I went to college, got married, had kids, still no deployment. And I read this book called Fiasco, which said that...
Who's that by?
I think it's Thomas Ricks. He's a Washington Post reporter. Mm-hmm. And it said that not only were there no weapons of mass destruction, but the Bush administration knew that that was a lie that Saddam Hussein was saying for his own posturing in that region. And they decided to pursue it anyway and set up Colin Powell. So I was never deployed because there were no weapons of mass destruction. And when I found out, whether, you know, erroneously or truthfully that the Bush administration had lied about it, I didn't feel comfortable with my service anymore. And I left the military in 2006 because I wasn't going to deploy for a lie.
That's interesting because I was wondering how you shifted. I mean, obviously your attitude and your knowledge has definitely changed from that of somebody who wants to go into the military to somebody who has, I guess, a more liberal attitude towards the military and towards fighting. So it sounds like when you found out that there were no weapons of mass destruction, that that was a real turning point for you.
So I definitely appreciate you saying that I have a liberal attitude towards the military, because that is not an anti-military attitude. I served in the military. So did my mother. So did my father. So did my grandparents. I grew up on a military base in Okinawa, Japan. I enjoy the military culture where there are people from all walks of life in the United States coming together to serve a common mission.
Friday was Veterans Day. What do you think of when Veterans Day comes around?
I try to think about what is the public's relationship with the military, with less than 1% of the United States population being active duty military. Compare that to Vietnam, when we had 25% of the United States population being in the military. I feel there's just a great misunderstanding and distance between the population and who's in the military today. A lot of people don't know where most of the money in Department of Defense is going. A lot of people don't know what veterans are struggling with now. They don't know what it's like to be deployed, and they don't know about the privatization of the military. Mm-hmm. And so I really want the public to look into it and to not abdicate the responsibility of talking to legislators about where is this money in our military going, and is it the benefiting my uncle who went to Vietnam, or is it benefiting companies like Blackwater? The veterans I know today are very concerned with lots of liberal things, such as the militarization of the police. I was in Colorado Springs last week talking about the 1033 and 1122 programs.
What are those programs?
That's the programs where local agencies, police departments, firefighters, child protective agencies, libraries can request government equipment. And they request a lot of benign things like, night vision gear and warm weather clothing. But a lot of what they request are M16s. So the 1033 program allows local departments to be able to request this kind of military-grade weaponry and get it for free. And we are, as military people, are very concerned because police training is not military training.
No, it's not.
And so for local police departments, or, you know, I read a letter about a child protective services agency who got an MRAP vehicle, which is this very heavily armored Humvee. They got it to show off to the kids there. And, you know, I don't know what Child Protective Services does these days, but I don't know why they would need that kind of vehicle or why they would want to show kids that kind of vehicle. So, you know, veterans are very concerned about, like I said, a lot of liberal things, and the 1033 program is definitely one of them.
I guess I'm wondering if law enforcement is a draw to veterans, people who are coming off the battlefield and back into society. Is law enforcement a draw for them?
I think so. I don't know the current numbers of veterans that are in law enforcement, but I also know there's a lot of people who wanted to get into the military and couldn't and ended up joining law enforcement mm-hmm. as well. So there's a lot of perceptions about what to do with this military equipment with people who haven't had the military type of training. And I think the government is doing a better job of training people to have this military equipment, but it's not the same thing as being deployed in a theater and learning how to use this weaponry with Geneva Conventions as military people are taught in basic training.
You went to the Dakota Access Pipeline protests in North Dakota, and you mentioned earlier that you stayed in the veterans camp.
That's right.
Talk about that.
So the Veterans Camp was started by somebody from Veterans for Peace and members of Iraq Veterans Against the War. And there is someone there named John American Horse, who's one of the leaders at the Ocheti-Sakawin camp, the main camp that is down there. And he goes, John American Horse, when he is part of the prayer marches in which he goes and talks to the police for, as a veteran, he wears full camouflage gear, and he also carries one of the prayer staffs. And so it's a very striking image to watch a Native American elder put on a beret and a military uniform and be Native American and also carry a prayer staff and go up to the police officers and say, I was on your side. I mean, I believe in protecting the people and doing law and order, and your presence here is not doing that. You are not on the right side. And I hope that he's been successful, because there are reports of police turning in their badges and
saying,
I'm not coming back. And so John American Horse is one of those people. And I feel like veterans have that unique identity to be able to go to people who say, I want the same things in this country for safety, for security, for freedom, and for these larger values, but sometimes you can get misused.
Mm-hmm. Well, Reverend Shauna Foster, minister of the Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation, thank you very much for coming in and speaking with me today.
Thank you, Amy.
That was Reverend Shauna Foster, minister of Carbondale's Two Rivers Unitarian Universalist Congregation, talking to Katie and Case. Amy Haddon Marsh.